Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by my partner, Jeff Reinbold. The training camps are rolling on, Jeff, in the United States. We've seen a couple of big-name players go down through injury, and we've had our first preseason game as well with the Baltimore Ravens and the Chicago Bears, and we're edging ever closer to the first full slate of preseason games. It's getting closer.
It is, and I tell you what, that was so good to see all of the, you know, all the hoopla and all the, you know, pageantry around the Hall of Fame. The speeches were outstanding, but it was great to see football again, see NFL football again. And, you know, my guy Kamale Correa, big night, six tackles, an interception, three sacks. You know, this may be the turning point year for him. I hope so.
What did you make of Lamar Jackson, Jeff? Obviously, so much was going to be looked at when it came to him, because, you know, there was no Joe Flacco in that game, no Mitchell Trubisky, and of course so much has been made of Jackson coming in and pressuring Flacco. What did he go, 4 of 10? He had an interception. I mean, what did you think? What were your early signs?
Well, I think let's talk about the interception first, because I think that was more an indication of anything where he's at right now. You know, he was late on a ball that in college you might get away with, but in the NFL, you know, and even against backup players in the NFL, those corners close so fast. And I think that's, you know, I think that's what he said post game, is that the biggest difference between the NFL in his mind isn't the size or the speed of the players, it's just how quickly everything happens. And, you know, we talk about veterans talking about that second and third year, how the game slows down for him. I think that's right where he's at right now. You know, for him to sit in the pocket, stand in the pocket, go from 1 to 2 to 3, I heard Brian Billick talk about that. He's got a long way to go in my mind before he's able to do that. Now, obviously, he is electric, and there's a lot of things to like about him. I was encouraged, frankly, when you talk about the quarterback situation in Baltimore, about RG3. I thought he looked good for his first time back, being away from football that long. And, you know, so again, I think Lamar Jackson's one of those young guys that's going to go through the young guy, you know, the young guy progression of, you know, trying to get the game to slow down for him a little bit. Because he, you know, again, Neil, you got to understand that the guy is young, he's extremely talented, but he's playing a position that's very, very difficult to play as a rookie.
Yeah. So Jackson went 4 of 10, 33 yards. He offered some glimpses of the future with an 8-yard touchdown pass to rookie tight end Hayden Hurst. He did have that one interception as well. RG3 played the entire first half, went 7 of 11, 58 yards, one touchdown, one interception. So a mixed bag for him as well. Jeff, Jackson had 8 carries for 25 yards and a long of 10. So I'm just looking. So, you know, he dropped back and threw 10 times, and he dropped back and then ran 8 times. And is this a thing that, you know, eventually, as the game slows down for him, we'll see fewer of those scrambles? Because sometimes we see an athletic young quarterback, they almost don't give themselves a chance. I mean, even Steve Young was probably that way at the start, wasn't he? Kind of almost got to the top of his drop, pulled it down, and away he went.
Yeah, and I think that that's the tendency with those guys early on in their career. Now, I think what's really good for Lamar Jackson is that he has RG3 in the same quarterback room.
Yeah.
Because let's go back to his career. Remember, he started the Hall of Fame game when he was a rookie, Neil, and you know, everybody said, you know, this is the new direction with quarterbacks, you know, because he did play well early in his career.
Yeah, first year, 2012.
The hits, you know, it's the hits more than anything else to me that gets them to, you know, not be flush happy out of the pocket. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, as he understands that if you're going to play this game very long at that position, it's really difficult to do it. Just go back to one read and, you know, it's not there, boom, I'm running. Now, that's all part of the maturity process. But I think there has been enough evidence in the first, you know, 2 weeks in camp that there are some things to like about the kid, and you know, he has He has an eagerness about him. You listen to him being interviewed. He's very humble. He's very, you know, he wants to be a great quarterback. So that's part of the battle. And I think, you know, again, for Ravens fans, it's going to be intriguing to watch this thing unfold.
Jeff, when you work with quarterbacks generally in training camp, and obviously there are certain battles that are going on around the NFL. We've discussed a lot of them in the past here on Inside the Huddle, whether it's Sam Darnold against Josh McCown, against Teddy Bridgewater, Josh Rosen and Sam Bradford. I want to know how much you want them to make mistakes, because obviously you'd love to see your quarterback play perfectly. But I heard an interview with Case Keenum this week, and he was talking about how he likes to take chances during training camp, and actually not be afraid of making the mistake is a key thing. I'd heard that said about Aaron Rodgers as well. He throws a lot more interceptions in training camp than he does during the regular season, because he kind of just throws it up there and lets his receivers, you know, he wants to find out which receivers are going to go up and get it. I mean, as a coach, how much kind of rope do you give them?
Well, I think it kind of depends on your guy, right? And in Aaron Rodgers' case, you know, obviously for him, he's trying to figure out who are the guys he can trust on 50-50 balls when he needs to get one, you know, a jump ball caught, or he's in, you know, in a tough situation, it's a third down and he knows he's going to throw a contested ball. He wants to know. That's where, you know, his relationship with Jordy Nelson came about. In the case of rookies, it's a little bit different. Is you want to see them demonstrate the ability to not turn the ball over, to protect the football, to be, you know, to be judicious with their reads, to play inside the system. Now, there are some guys, coaches, who go the other way, who say, okay, go out there, just let it rip, and then, you know, we'll pick up the pieces and do the evaluation afterwards. I think it just depends on where that guy's at in his development and where the team feels he needs to be. So, for example, in Trubisky's case last year, obviously, Neil, it was so, and I think Carson Wentz a little bit is a rookie for him, too. It was very, very, very generic, very vanilla, very protect the ball. We're not going to push it down the field. We're not going to take chances. We're going to try and, you know, win that way. And that was because they had to play early. Now, in another guy's case, you may say, okay, let's go out there and let's really push it and see what you got and just let it rip. But you may not have to play for another couple of years. Do you understand the philosophy difference in how you approach it? So I think a lot depends on where that guy's going to be actually playing early in his career.
We're going to go through a few stories around the NFL, maybe just sort of sprinkle in, you know, how you evaluate players in training camp. Jeff, I'm looking at an article from one of the Around the NFL podcast guys, Greg Rosenthal, on NFL.com about kind of training camp winners and losers in the first week. And he kind of points to a couple of wide receivers. So Chris Godwin in Tampa Bay, Marquise Goodwin with the 49ers, John Ross with Cincinnati, he talks about. But Jeff, I wanted to ask you this. I meant to ask you this last week, based on me being out at training camps. How do you evaluate running backs in training camp these days?
Yeah, because nobody's getting tackled or hit.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it comes down to, Neil, right now, you know, physically what they're able to do, their quickness, their balance, their ability to pass protect, which you can get a feel for individual drills, because they don't, again, you're not going to the ground. But really, ultimately, it's how are they going to perform when the hits come? You know, who can avoid tacklers? Who can make guys miss? You know, who can run through arms? All that. Steven Jackson talked yesterday about, you know, training camp for a running back, and he felt like you needed two games in training camp to really get ready to play in a season. You didn't need four. So again, the as you know, the tough thing is, as a coach, you're always, you know, leveraging the exposure to hits and the possibility of him getting hurt with how do you get him ready to take the hits, and how do you see in a young guy his ability to play at that physical level that an NFL running back has to play at, you know, because it is different, and everything happens so much faster. You know, in college, when you run the zone play, that window may be open for a second and a half. Well, in the NFL, it's open a half a second, and timing and all of that can only come when you really play, you know, full on football. And so, in that case, I think what you're looking for right now is, you know, guys' ability to retain information. You know, can he understand all the pass protections? Has he got the kind of quickness and balance and all those things you're looking for? How is he able to catch the ball out of the backfield? Can he beat a linebacker one-on-one in space? All of that stuff you can see during training camp, but until you put the pads on, until you see how they handle the hits, can he protect the football, all that stuff doesn't happen until you get him in a game.
The Cleveland Browns have had a couple of years to evaluate Corey Coleman, their first-round pick from 2016, and they've seen enough of the wide receiver, Jeff. He's missed 13 games over the past 2 years. He caught 56 passes in two seasons with the Browns. He's been traded to the Buffalo Bills. By all accounts, this is a kind of low-risk trade for the Bills. I think it was seventh-round draft pick.
Seventh-rounder, yeah.
Yeah. Jeff, Peter King, in his... what's his new column called? Football Morning in America. I was going to call it the MMQB. So, Football Morning in America. Peter notes that Cleveland have had 11 first-round draft picks from 2009 to 2016. None of them are on the team, Jeff. I mean, that is why this team is in the doldrums, or was in the doldrums for so long, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's an indication. You know, they haven't drafted well. They've had a lot of misfortune with, you know, inside the organization. You know, this is the first, Hugh Jackson's, you know, first number one pick. And, you know, here you go, you get rid of him. Now, you got to understand, the fans have to understand, a first rounder for a seventh rounder, I mean, that is like an open admission that you made a mistake. It's a low risk deal for the Bills. It's great for the Bills because here's a guy that can run. But again, go back to when the kid came out of Baylor, Neil. What did we talk about? And was we were preparing for the draft. He's a one-trick pony. He has not played in a intricate passing system. He's a vertical guy. That's all he can do. And he was never able to develop those skills in Cleveland. Now, he may fit a need that Buffalo may have for a guy that can stretch the top and take the top off the coverage and all that. But in terms of being able to be a true finished wide receiver, he's never made that progress. And to get rid of a first-round pick this early, you know, 3 years into his career, that's an indication that the guy was a bust. And I think another indication of what Dorsey's doing there, and he's turning that roster over, he's going to have his guys. And I think it's another reason why Hugh should be concerned about the fact they don't start early. If they don't start well early, you know, he may be out of work.
Yeah, a couple of things on that. I mean, Corey Coleman, Jeff, as you say, is an example of there being so much more to the wide receiver position than just run fast, catch football. And John Ross is going to have to learn that this year, you know, with the Cincinnati Bengals, a guy who blew away the scouts with his running at the combine last year. When I sat with Doug Baldwin last week, and I said, you know, obviously we all see the catches and we see the speed, but what does it take to be an NFL wide receiver? And he kind of laughed and went, how long have you got? And then he went into great detail, but he kind of boiled it down to basically you have to be able to read defenses. You know, not every or a large number of plays are not run here and, you know, catch the football. He said a lot of it is run downfield, read what the coverage is, adjust. And also he said, you know, you just have to have this kind of innate ability to get on the same page as the quarterback. I mean, you can take us into that. You've coached wide receivers as well. I mean, it's very rarely, you know, just run a 5 yard in or a slant. I mean, there are occasions when it's that, but it's so much more than that, isn't it?
No, it's without question. You know, I've had four guys that I coached in college make it in the NFL.
Yep.
Emmanuel Sanders, Cole Beasley, you know, Aldrick Robinson, Darius Johnson, all made it in the NFL, and all were the same kind of guy. Now, they weren't the biggest guy. You've been around Emmanuel. We've had him over in London. They weren't the fastest guy. You know, Cole's probably a 4.55 guy at tops, but they all had an incredible ability to understand defenses and where the stress points and coverage were and how to get themselves into position, how to be, quote, available to the quarterback. You know, that's as big a thing as anything. All that speed and all that linear stuff that you judge at the combine, that's all great, but the game isn't played that way. The game is moving parts. There's a lot that goes on. And a guy's ability to understand, and here's what's happening in college football now, Neil. There's so much of the RPO and the bubble screens, and really what receivers are learning are two things: how to run the bubble screen and how to go vertical. That's really what you see in college football. There are so few guys who play in systems where they come out polished and finished. And frankly, they don't see the coverages in college football even close to what they'll see in the NFL. In college football, in a vast majority of the cases, they're going to see a little bit of man. There's hardly any bump and run. You're going to get a little bit of man. You're going to get mostly quarters and two deep because of the way the offenses are now in college football. And so these kids come into the NFL, and you know the defensive coordinator puts in 13 coverages the first day. Well, that's now he's got to be able to know all the adjustments to all the routes off of those coverages. So it is a handful, and there's nothing that slows a receiver down more than having to think. And if he's struggling with recognition, the quarterbacks are going to get off of him right now because they know what they got. 1,001, 1,002, and that thing better be out of their hands.
Yeah.
It's really, really important that they're able to do that, and that's what Coleman didn't do at Baylor.
Why do the players allow themselves to be put in positions where they're not going to be prepared for the NFL, Jeff? Or is it because that kind of stuff you just described, bubble screens, goes, is now so prolific in college football? I'm thinking back to, you know, when Troy Aikman came out in late '80s, '89. Troy Aikman started out at Oklahoma running the wishbone offense, which was not going to get him to the NFL as a quarterback. He transferred to UCLA, but it seems like so many of these guys are not prepared for the NFL, especially young receivers that have been coming in. John Ross, again, is a good example last year. Cordarrelle Patterson, another one. I mean, there's a graveyard of kind of young receivers who haven't made it early in the NFL draft. Kevin White in Chicago, Breshad Perriman in Baltimore. We can go on and on. Is it because it's so widespread that they wouldn't be able to go anywhere else in college because everyone's doing it?
Well, I think that's part of it. It's, you know, it's what most teams are doing now in college football. But if you look at certain teams, Alabama being one, I mean, but there's only 25 guys a year, so there's only 25 guys that can go to Alabama. Everybody else got to find a place to play, and you know, college football recruiting is such an interesting deal too. I mean, we could talk for 3 episodes on that alone. but you know, I just really think that a lot of kids just get caught up in the wrong things. They get caught up in, okay, they've got this kind of facility and I've got this many uniform changes and, you know, all the stuff that, you know, if you really want to play in the NFL, you better go someplace where they're going to coach you hard and you're going to be pushed mentally and physically to get better at your position, at the skills that it takes to play in the league. Because, again, there's a lot of fast guys in the world. There's a lot of them. But there, you know, aren't a lot of fast guys who can process information, get in and out of breaks, do all the things that it takes, and understand. These kids come out of college football now. We see it in, you know, in our level of pro football, I know they see it in the NFL. These kids come out of college football now, frankly, Neil, less prepared than ever to play professional football.
And especially shows up at receiver. Let's stick with receivers. One receiver who thinks he would have been better during his time in Carolina was Kelvin Benjamin, had number one been more accurate. Let me just read this quote. I'm sure you've seen it, Jeff, but great to get your reaction. Kelvin Benjamin, now a wide receiver with the Buffalo Bills, he said, if you would have put me with any other quarterback, let's be real. You know what I'm saying? Any other accurate quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers or Eli Manning or Big Ben, quarterbacks with knowledge. Talk about a shot at Cam Newton. Ouch. Oh, my goodness. I mean, there's an element of truth, though, in that we know that Cam's not always been the, you know, not always been the most accurate of quarterbacks. But, you know, Kelvin Benjamin was the 1,000-yard receiver in Carolina. The year he wasn't there, actually, Cam was NFL MVP when he was out injured.
Yeah, you know what? I think this one was really interesting to me because, you know, obviously we all recognize that Cam's strengths are his athleticism and his ability to throw the ball deep. He's a very, very good deep ball thrower. He's not as good an intermediate or short thrower, but that was never a part of the offense. I think if Kelvin wants to, you know, point the finger at somebody other than himself for not being in shape all the time, that he could point the finger at, you know, Mike Shula and the offense, because you know, they didn't do a lot of that stuff. It was, you know, it was Cam on play action, throw the ball deep or throw it to Greg Olsen. Now, you hear Greg Olsen come to Cam's defense, and he said, Cam Newton's the best thing that ever happened in my career.
Mm.
I think it's just kind of what his role in the offense and you know, what that offense was all about. So, again, he's in a new place now, and I think I just think it's so much better if players don't, you know, point the finger backwards. And
yeah,
if they're going to point the finger at yourself. Say, okay, didn't work for me in Carolina, but hey, I love Buffalo. We're going to be great here. Da da da. Whatever you got to say. That's just kind of a shot to me.
Yeah, Sean McDermott wasn't happy, was he?
Mm-mm.
I mean, you don't want him to talk in cliches, but you do if you're a coach. You want him to just, you know, avoid those kind of headlines. What about Howie Roseman and Doug Peterson then in Philadelphia, Jeff? They get their contracts extended through 2022. You know, this is a great story in that, you know, we know, you know, Doug Peterson took down the man in the hoodie, and you know, you were working with him in NFL Europe. You know how far he came so quickly, and you know, both these guys have been on incredible journeys. When you think about, you know, Howie Roseman effectively being locked out of the building during the Chip Kelly era in Philadelphia, now, you know, they've both been rewarded for a Super Bowl winning season. What's your thoughts on those deals being extended?
I think it's really good for both guys. And like you say, both guys are fantastic stories. Here's Doug, who, you know, played for us in NFL Europe, goes back, and he's really a career backup in some good places. I mean, he backs up Favre in Green Bay. He backs up in Philadelphia. But all that time was polishing his football knowledge. And then, you know, retires, goes into high school coaching. And here I walk into a portable, I mean, it's like a trailer is what it was, a portable office, a trailer in Shreveport, Louisiana. And it's Doug Peterson sitting behind the desk. And now here we are, 10 years later, and he's getting rewarded for winning a Super Bowl. I think it's an incredible journey. And, you know, he handled that team extremely well. That team faced tremendous adversity during the course of the season, losing your franchise quarterback, all of that stuff. And he was able to keep them focused, keep them winning, and you know, to win a championship. That's the bottom line, you know, and so he's been rewarded for that now. And Roseman, I think, really interesting, Neil, like you said, he was sent, I mean, he was banished. I mean, just banished. And when, you know, they took his keys away and, you know, had no role. He was publicly humiliated, really. And you know, was when Chip left, he was welcomed back into the building and, you know, has done a great job of putting a great football team together. That's a, you know, you go through the Philadelphia Eagle roster, that is a really, really strong roster.
Yeah, we saw it. I think we saw it last year in the playoffs. I mean, so many of their touchdowns were from guys who weren't even on the team at the start of the year. Nick Foles was throwing touchdowns. Alshon Jeffrey's catching them. Jay Ajayi's running them in. I mean, there were players that were making an impact that, you know, Roseman hadn't just added via the draft. He'd wheeled and dealed his way around the league as well. Jeff, just on them. I mean, I'm fascinated by those kinds of stories, and I think that they are littered throughout the NFL and throughout pro football history. You know, Kurt Warner's story, of course, is a ridiculous rags-to-riches tale. Obviously, we've seen it with a number of coaches, but it does seem like there's a number of coaches now that have come from very humble beginnings. And I also think I was watching last week. These are just random thoughts that occur to me when I'm at training camp. I'm recording a couple of little video pieces on the side of the field after practice in the Napa Valley. And I'm watching the groundsmen, you know, the grounds crew. Mm-hmm. There's like five of them going up there. They're digging bits of the field, throwing down some dirt in the bits where the players have kicked it all up in the morning. One of them's up and down on the mower. And I thought about Thomas Dimitroff. Thomas Dimitroff was a groundsman for the Cleveland Browns. And Bill Belichick kind of invited him in, covered in white paint and dirt and grass every day to watch film. So some of these guys have come from the most humble beginnings. And I mean, is it just because there's a culture of kind of helping each other in the NFL? Why do you think, because some of the stories are almost too good to be true.
Well, I think, you know, in the case of a lot of those guys, you know, and this has kind of become the way to get into the NFL now. is these guys come in any way, shape, or form. They just you want to get in the building.
Yeah.
And you know, in the case of Dimitrov, you know, he comes from a football family. His father was worked in the Canadian Football League. He actually went to college in Canada, and though he's American, he played college football up here, but wanted an opportunity to get into pro football. Well, Belichick says, yeah, you can come, but you're going to have to do this first, right? Just to show that you belong, which is the way that Belichick does it. Why? Because that's how he got started.
Yeah.
You know, his first job was to in Baltimore, was to drive players to the airport. And in those days, you know, when you had tape of the games, film of the games, you had to send it out to a place to have it processed and then brought back to the facility. Well, he was the guy that they would send out to go pick up the film at, you know, midnight when it was done and bring it back to the facility. So he started that way. And I think there's a number of guys who now believe in that system. You hire a bunch of young guys in menial tasks and then basically let them cannibalize themselves and find out which ones really, really want it.
Because if they survive, they really want it, yeah?
Yeah, and I mean, that's really what it's come. Andy Reid does it that way. Belichick does it that way. There's a number of guys who do it that way. And, you know, I think it's encouraging for a young guy who may just have that passion to be in pro football. And really, there's a lot of these guys did not play high-level college football or did not play in the pros, certainly, but just have, you know, a dream of being in the NFL. Look at Matt Patricia, went to a school which is far more known for engineering and rocket science than it is for Saturday afternoons in the fall. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a number of them, particularly out of that Belichick school, that have come up that way. Josh McDaniels, on and on and on and on and on. And so, again, it's just the kind of the way it's done now.
It'd be fascinating to create a list and have one column as to be, you know, kind of what you were doing when you entered the NFL and another column to where they became their most famous. So Kurt Warner would say supermarket shelf stacker, Hall of Fame quarterback. Brian Billick, Jeff, who won a Super Bowl, was head coach of the Ravens. The column on the left-hand side would say PR intern for the San Francisco 49ers. He worked in public relations. Even Commissioner Roger Goodell started out as a PR intern.
Yeah, I mean, well, you started out that way.
Now look, true.
You're the king of all media in the UK.
Not quite the same comparison. I'm certainly not on the same.
you're the Howard Stern of NFL in the UK.
Yeah, I'm about $38 million short of that per year.
It's all relative.
So, yeah, exactly. Who needs all that?
Isn't that what they tell you when you negotiate your contract? It's all relative.
You can't buy happiness.
There are some of those guys that are very, you know, phenomenal stories. I mean, you know, here's Malcolm Butler. Let's talk, you know, here's a guy. Rags to riches to rags again, and then now more to riches, right? Because he's an undrafted free agent out of West Georgia. You know, a rookie in the Super Bowl, makes the biggest play in, you know, maybe in Super Bowl history. Then, you know, a couple years later, Super Bowl, and he doesn't play, and, you know, everybody wonders why, and he's the, you know, and I don't know if you blame him. I mean, he's one of those guys that you just go, that'll be a Super Bowl question forever.
Oh, yeah.
And then now he's in Tennessee, and he's found a new home and is playing extremely well and got a big, fat contract, and, you know, everybody's in love with Malcolm Butler again. So that's kind of the way it is, you know. Alex Smith, here's another guy. You know, I mean, you go through it. It's so many of these guys. One of the things that you know you're going to get in pro football, and that's adversity. And so it's how you handle it, and if you keep battling.
Butler's a good example to Kelvin Benjamin, Jeff, because I sat down with him last week and I asked him about, you know, the whole Super Bowl experience, and he could have really, really thrown rocks at the Patriots, and he didn't. He made it obvious that he was disappointed. You know, he said it didn't work out for them and it didn't work out for me, but he said Bill Belichick's the greatest of all time. You know, in Super Bowl 49, nobody had heard of Malcolm Butler, but he put me in the game. This time he took me out of the game. So you know, he could have gone a lot stronger on the pass. I mean, he did say that it is fuel to his flames and it's motivation, but he didn't kind of really lay into the Patriots and Belichick. And, you know, you're right, maybe that his coach then would have been pleased that he's just moving forward.
Yeah, I think that that's really the much better way to handle it, because, you know, there's no, you know, you're never gonna win that thing. It's move on. Let's say thank you for, you know, what the lessons you learned, for having the opportunity that you got, and you know, talk about your new team. Talk about today. Let's not go back into the past. But again, you know, sometimes guys just it's tough, you know, because they want to carry that stuff with them. I tell you what, it's much better if you just leave it behind and move on.
We'll be moving on this week to week two of the preseason. As I said earlier, this is the first full slate of games, starts on Thursday night. And really, you know, the preseason is a good chance for you to watch that. We'll have several games on Sky Sports, but you can also watch a lot of NFL on Game Pass. So let me just give you some of the details on NFL Game Pass, which is the ultimate way to watch games, highlights, and NFL programs where and when you want. Watch your favorite team live each week, or tune into NFL Red Zone to never miss a touchdown. If you can't watch live, you can download highlights direct to your phone or tablet and catch up on the go. There's great NFL programming being added to the video library, and NFL Network is streamed 24/7, 365 days of the year. You can get in on the action and check out NFLGamePass.com to start your free 7-day trial today. So that's NFLGamePass.com. Jeff, when those games start on Thursday night, we'll see the Indianapolis Colts take on the Seattle Seahawks, and it will be a return to the field for Andrew Luck, who told Peter King this week that he sees light at the end of the tunnel. And last year, this time, he wasn't being very honest with himself in terms of whether he was ready, and, you know, the whole process of getting better from that shoulder injury. I mean, this is going to be a sight to behold for Colts fans, albeit the first preseason action. And, you know, Andrew has said he's kind of still nowhere near where he wants to be.
Well, I tell you what, if they play him, and it was me, I'd say, okay, Andrew, here's what we're going to do. We're going to hand it off twice and throw a screen and get you out of there.
Really? You don't think he needs extended work? Or is it just a step in the process?
I think he needs extended work, Neil. I agree with that. But we've got four preseason games now. And I'd really, really, really be gentle getting him back. Because, you know, like you say, if he's admitting that he's nowhere near where he needs to be, then I think the worst thing you can do is get him out there and get him hit early. I think getting him in the game is real positive. I think it's positive. It sends a positive message to everybody in the organization, the fans, everybody. But again, to expose him to a number of hits right now, I don't think that's a good idea. I think it's interesting. We talk about preseason games, you know, and Baker Mayfield's going to play an awful lot, apparently, maybe even two quarters in Cleveland. And I think that's really that's interesting now, because it's a good time for him to play, because obviously things are more vanilla. The defenses will be, you know, you'll see less blitzing, all of that kind of stuff early. So he has a chance to kind of get his feet wet and get started. I think there's no question that's Tyrod Taylor's team.
Yeah.
But the future is, you know, there. And that's so now this is a good opportunity to get him extended time, maybe two quarters. And, you know, let him work with the first offensive line, because what you don't want is him out there with a bunch of guys that are, you know, are playing together for the first time, and, you know, they see twists for the first time live, and all of a sudden now he's getting, you know, whacked.
Yeah.
So, and that's again how you kind of you say he needs work, but what kind of work are we going to get him? And it's interesting, you know, sometimes in these early preseason games, there'll be kind of a mutual agreement amongst the organizations and the coaches that this is what we're going to do. You're not going to see these things. We're not going to zero blitz him. Da 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 da.
Right.
And so that player has a chance to develop, because the object is not to win these games. The object is to evaluate players and develop players in these preseason games.
You've touched on it quite a bit there, Jeff. The sort of the managing of a player, and Frank Reich himself said, you know, we can put Andrew Luck in games scenarios and situations in our training camp, and he can, but he can't see him get hit to the floor, but obviously he wants to kind of manage all of that. But I was wondering, you know, again, as coaches, how you kind of, you manage these players who are fiercely competitive, alpha males, who are in the NFL because they believe they can physically do anything, and quite often they can. You know, Andrew himself said he wasn't honest with himself last year and probably came back too soon, tried to come back too soon. You know, we're seeing a number of big name players around the NFL working their way back with a view to starting in week one, the first full slate of games, Sunday, September the 9th. We're seeing J.J. Watt with Houston, Odell Beckham Jr. with the Giants, Aaron Rodgers with Green Bay. So how do you manage them?
Well, they're each in the individual case, you know, and first of all, the first aspect of managing them is, where are they at physically? You have to have great communication from the training staff, from the team doctors, from everybody involved with that, and understand how much their body can take right now. So, for example, you're talking about J.J. Watt. Here's a guy that if you don't put a leash on him, he's going to be out there going 100%, you know, every snap. And so managing their reps, managing the exposure, that comes with great communication from your training staff and where you at. And sometimes with some players, I mean, you got to take their helmet away from them because they're just going to go out there and play. That's who they are. Mm-hmm. Others you got to prod to play a little bit more and to push themselves. So it's an individual thing there. And then I think, again, Neil, managing it from the standpoint of how much is this guy going to see? How much is he, or how much do we need to see out of him? Mm-hmm. Right? You know, you'll protect some that, you know, are behind the developmental curve because, you know, maybe they're coming out of a system in college that, you know, they didn't have to do NFL-type things. We're going to baby step them into the process. Other guys you're going to push because, you know, they've been with you a couple years. Now it's time to find out whether you can do it or not and make a final decision. So each of those is kind of an individual case. And that's the great thing about training camp. You know, when you go back as a coach after practice and you sit in those meetings and you talk personnel, where's this guy at, and let's look at this and this and this, that's the fun part. I think training camp to me, and you know me, I'm a football junkie, but I think training camp is the best time of year.
Yeah, it really is a great time. You touched on an interesting point there, Jeff, and I think it kind of relates to Carson Wentz, who should be another name that I put on that list. I mean, there are a number of big-name players racing to be fit, and Doug Peterson said, you know, this, whether he starts in week one or starts in week two or three or four will be the doctor's decision. And that represents a kind of a shift in, you know, the NFL, and not a drastic one. We've been leaning that way for a number of years. I think player safety is such an important thing. But if you want to go and find a book called You're Okay, It's Just a Bruise, it's written by the team doctor of the Oakland Raiders in the 70s and 80s. It wasn't always the team doctor making those calls, but it certainly seems to be that way now.
Well, there's no question. You know, again, some of that has to do with, frankly, with, you know, it's with the litigation that teams and the league have faced because of players being put on the field before they were ready. Players, you know, I mean, I don't want to go into all the ugliness of it, but, you know, there was a time in the league where prescription pain-killing drugs were widely used, and so that players could get on the field. And, you know, again, those days, thankfully, are long behind us. It's now, you know, the coach is a part of the decision-making process, but only after the information and the okay has been given by the team doctors and the training staff. So I think that's really the way it should be, because number one, these guys are human beings, and you know you got to protect them.
Mm. Let's move on to take some questions in the mailbag then, because Jeff, I'm just going through them now, and we've got a lot of questions, a bunch of them here. Let's start with this quite broad sort of question, but it's a good one with the preseason games coming up now over the coming weeks. It comes from Daniel Stanley, who says, when trimming the roster, what weight is given to performance in preseason games, and could it be used to resolve potential quarterback dilemmas? I mean, it's not everything, is it? But there is a chance, of course, Jeff, for players to catch the eye.
Yeah, it's really interesting, Neil. You know, that's a really deep question. Mm. First and foremost, there's economics involved.
Sure.
part of it, right? How much money do you have invested in the guy? Where did you draft him? Well, the higher he's drafted, the more money you've got in him, the longer he's going to stick around and the more chances he's going to get. You know, there's a saying that if you're drafted high, you have to prove you can't. And if you're a free agent, you have to prove you can. And that's a, there's a big difference there.
Yeah, yeah.
And so
you get more chances, right? The other way.
Yeah, we've seen it all along, and then eventually your chances run out if you don't perform. Ultimately, you have to perform, and the reason that they still play four preseason games is that so a number of these guys get enough opportunities to show that they belong on the roster, because it's the one time in the year when you're going to get full contact, take them to the ground football. Because once the season starts, it's, you know what practice is like. They're very, very, very little full contact. So I think these games are absolutely critical, and they're critical in a number of ways too, Neil, because as a coach, you want these guys in scenarios during the course of the game that you can practice in practice, but you never really get a feel for until you get in the game. No huddle, 2-minute, 4-minute offense, 4-minute defense. You know, all of those scenarios, you want to see your guys perform in a live environment against teams, against another team, and somebody that they're not used to lining up against. So I think these preseason games are fascinating, and I think they're an opportunity for a player, obviously, to make a football team, but for a football team to really come together in situational football.
Jeff, you're so right about some players just going to have chance after chance after chance. I was at Chargers camp, as you know, and I'm stood there with our crew, and I watched EJ Manuel throw in the football, and he had some throws that were really high. He was really missing high quite a bit. And I turned to our crew and I said, we could go to 5 different training camps over the next 5 years and easily see EJ Manuel turn up in one of those camps. The reason being, he's 6'5", he's got a cannon for an arm, and he's 230 pounds as a former first round draft pick. Sometimes coaches can't resist the physical attributes.
And, you know, there's this belief that we can fix him.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell, you know, and again, Neil, here we go, right? What does this speak to? It speaks to we need a developmental leap.
Yeah.
One of the great things about NFL Europe was it was not only a place where Kurt Warner could show that he can play, it was a place where Akili Smith could find, or Andre Ware,
yeah,
or whoever could finally confirm the fact that they couldn't play.
Yeah, I mean, I always use the example, and he was a lovely guy, so I feel bad using it, but Joe Germain, who was a quarterback, allocated by the Kansas City Chiefs, went to the Barcelona Dragons, was a high draft pick, was on about $3 or $4 million a year with the Chiefs. They realized he couldn't play, and they managed to get that money off their roster. So it was as much about the other way. Yeah, we always look at the success stories, but helping out teams find out who could or couldn't play was a big thing. This is another big picture question here, Jeff, which I'm sure you've kind of sat around your coaches' offices late into the night when you're all sitting there shooting the breeze and eating your pizza. Comes from Michael Richards, who says, there have been a number of non-contact ACL injuries this off-season. Is this just unlucky, or is there an argument that players are too muscular/heavy for their bodies to support their weight?
Well, obviously, there's a deep question.
I know, we're getting really deep. So we'll have Oprah read these out in a minute.
Yeah, but I think there's some truth to what he says there. I mean, the human body's not made to be put through some of the stresses that this game puts them through. And, you know, it's like Vince Lombardi said in the 60s, the knee, always the knee,
yeah,
right? The knee joint isn't built for, you know, sport. And I'm not just talking about football. It's not built for soccer. It's not built for any sport, right? And the bigger the muscle is and the more force the muscle can exert, well, the tendons and ligaments and, you know, those kinds of things, they don't grow and they toughen, but they don't grow. So there is going to be a propensity of those kind of things. But I also think that when you talk about, like, let's use the 49ers, I mean, shoot, the Chargers as a perfect example. Hunter Henry, Verrett, this year, how many guys have they had in their off-season work or preseason work that they've lost? Now, you can. I will bet you my next paycheck that that organization is looking at everything that they do right now, from the field that they practice on, to the shoes, to the diet, to the, you know, weight program, to, you know, everything, trying to figure out, is it just, are we snake bit, or is there something that we're doing that is leading to these, you know, injuries at top level players? I mean, you lose a Jason Verrett and a Hunter Henry tight end, you're talking about top line players. You can't go out and find those guys on the street. And, you know, so I think this is a big, big question that everybody, you know, injury prevention that everybody's looking at.
Last one, Jeff, comes from Jack Price Harbach, who says, is this a make or break season for Ryan Tannehill and or Adam Gase? So Gase went 10-6 his first year, 6-10 last year. He followed that with the offloading of Jarvis Landry and Ndamukong Suh, Mike Pouncey, Lawrence Timmons. So they've made some big high-profile moves in Miami. And Tannehill's been around a while now, Jeff. Just, what do you reckon, make or break season for either of those guys or both?
Well, I think for Tannehill, it's a really critical year because, first of all, he's coming off an injury.
Yeah.
Right? He's got to prove he can stay healthy. And I think the expectation level right now in Miami is such that if they don't get to the playoffs, if they don't become that kind of football team, then I think it's time to move on. And I think it'll be more than just the quarterback. But I just think that they're at that stage as a football team. So, you know, again, those are tough issues. But the bottom line is, this is a bottom line game. It's a production oriented business. If you don't produce, they're going to find somebody else to do it. And, you know, we can never lose sight of that in this business.
Just one programming note to let you know about. So we talked a lot about the Cleveland Browns earlier this podcast. They are going to feature on the Hard Knocks series, which begins this coming Friday, 10:30 p.m. on Sky Sports Action. And Jeff, as you know, we never can work out the technology to do these podcasts when I'm on the road. So I'm away for the next 2 weeks. I'm on holiday. So,
well, you know what? It's France is a different place. You know, again, when you're over there sipping wine and, you know, whatever. Where are you going this year? I tell you what, you, as bad as your travel agent and who travel agent is for doing training camps, whoever it is that puts you in on holidays puts you in some pretty nice spots.
Well, I figured because I've just been to kind of New York, Nashville, L.A., San Francisco, Seattle, 6 flights in 6 days. I thought, how about a flight back to America? So I'm going to Orlando for 2 weeks.
Oh, nice.
So I'll be there with Mickey Mouse and, you know, the Minions and Spider-Man, all of that stuff with the kids. So so I was going to say our next podcast will be either Wednesday or Thursday, August the 29th or August the 30th. And the reason I say either of those dates is because it will be determined by TV schedules. Because, Jeff, we will begin the proposition that is the Inside the Huddle television version of this show. So we will record for TV from August the 29th or August the 30th. It'll be a little bit shorter because it's for TV, but you and I are going to stay on the line at the end and do a little bit of kind of Inside the Huddle overtime so people still get their fill of Reynolds and Reinbold.
That's nice. That's good to hear. You know, I'm excited about that, and you know, taking it to another platform I think is awesome, and on demand at Sky, and, you know, just another example of how, you know, NFL UK and Sky and everybody are, you know, keeping up with the demand for, you know, NFL information in the UK. And certainly being a part of that, Neil, you and I, watching this thing grow from what it was when we started,
yes,
Inside the Huddle, to now taking it to another platform is really, really, and it's really a cool thing.
We are very, very lucky, that's for sure. And yes, we are going to enjoy that. We're going to enjoy the TV proposition. Oh, Jeff, I'm going to have a TV tan. 2 weeks in Florida.
You'll be just killer. I saw the little scruff you were working out too. That's nice. That's good for you.
That was There's been a few comments on Twitter about my beard. It's more just kind of an off-season thing. I tried it during the season a couple of times. It just didn't look like I'd slept. So I don't know if I can pull it off in the season, but it's...
You were doing a homeless, look like a homeless guy routine?
Yeah, I tried it. You know, I gave it a go. Look, if I can't grow it on top, Jeff, I'll grow it on the chin.
I think if you get together with the wardrobe people, you know, and put a little funk to that, and then you got that 3-day, you know, Jason Statham look, I think that's good for you, Neil.
All right, I'm going to give it a try. You know, I've got a little bit of salt and pepper in the beard. That means it's a good thing. That means you're wise.
Yeah, that's well. Unless you got a beard like mine, which is all salt, it means you're old.
Good place to leave it, Jeff. We will be back in a couple of weeks, so I'll see you all after my holidays, and you'll see us on Sky Sports with the TV version of Inside the Huddle. Until then, say goodbye to the good folks, Jeff.
Aloha.